This is the Dr. Touch podcast. Episode 11, Waiting for Iceland. And these are the news, or actually there are no news, because the whole world is trying to guess what the announcement on January 27th will be about. But, well, let's just summarize what we know so far. On January 27th, Steve Jobs is expected to unveil the fabled Iceland tablet computer. The only concrete information had been the time and date and the invitation to see Apple's latest creation. It is unlikely, however, to be something in an existing product line. The artsy look of the invitation with color blotches suggests something colorful and not sticking with a pre-existing frame of reference. So far, we can guess that the Iceland will be a 10-inch tablet with two dock connectors so that it can be used in portrait and landscape mode. It will use an advanced multi-touch metaphor like we know it from the iPhone, and sources tell us that there will be a steep learning curve for the brand new interface, as multi-touch gestures will be the main source of navigation. The Iceland will run apps made with iPhone SDK 4.0. For this purpose, you get a second simulator with the SDK, one for iPhone and one for the tablet. When building your app, you will not have any difference between building for tablet or iPhone. Only when submitting it for review, you will have to specify with which platforms you can support. The Iceland has media consumption as primary focus, but Apple is also considering vertical market applications, like in hospitals, to replace traditional clipboard and paper. Since the App Store has been one of Apple's most lucrative inventions, we can be rather certain that this will also be the preferred mode of getting apps onto the device. This restrictive policy has long been said to be the major drawback for using the iPhone for corporate applications, but at the same time, rumors tell us that iPhone OS 4.0 will make the mobile devices more like PCs. One immediate effect we can think of is that we will finally be getting Bluetooth keyboard support for all iPhone OS-based devices, as well as a possibility to use the iPhone or Iceland as multi-touch input for your desktop Mac, possibly also as additional wireless display. The consensus is that the Iceland will have between 5 and 8 hours of battery life to be useful mobile device, which you can carry around from meeting to meeting without having to recharge it all the time. Having GPS was one rumor, but in the very least we're going to see core location via Wi-Fi so that you can use cool mapping applications on the Iceland. Finally, about price. The sweet spot for which there currently exists no device in Apple's product line is between $500 and $800. Since Apple has a history of putting the price towards the absolute upwards pain threshold, it could be as high as $1,000 initially. Though since Apple has learned from the mistake of having an exclusivity deal with AT&T, it's likely that mobile providers will offer deals where you get the tablet for maybe $700 with 2-year contract. Well, we could be totally wrong. Rumors about the tablet exist for over 10 years now, ever since Apple made these two famous concept videos, Future Shock and Knowledge Navigator. I have links to these on my blog. I'm convinced that these portray the vision that Apple has been working towards feverishly, though we still won't be getting an AI as digital personal assistant wearing a bow tie who is able to usefully answer our calls and do our bidding. Or will we? In any case, you can bet that I'll be glued to the meta blogs of all the major sites as the announcement is taking place. Judging from what we saw on the 2010 CES, many people seem to think that this year will be the year of the tablet. We would be astonished if Apple won't try to do with this market what they did already do with the iPhone or iPod. Well, and that's it for the news. Today I have another special guest. It turned out that people really love to hear the interviews I'm doing with fellow iPhone developers. So today I got Lee Armstrong from Pinkfruit with me. He's a hobbyist iPhone developer who, together with two other guys, got interested in tracking planes and ships around the world. And, well, he's going to tell us about his new his latest app. And I'm really excited to have you here, Lee. Hi.
Thank you very much, Oliver.
So tell us about your background and what this thing is that you put together for us.
Sure. Well, roughly around last year, around June, I started developing for the iPhone. It was mainly when the 3.0 SDK came out. I have an interest in ships and planes, and I live right on the seafront in the UK. So I've always wanted to know what ship that is out on the sea, out of my window. And I've discovered that there's a network of AIS, it's called, and people broadcast the ship locations. So with iPhone 3.0, obviously the map view came in, and I decided to write an app called Ship Finder that plots the location of ships on a map.
Mm-hmm.
This then turned into a Plane Finder, where you can now get planes on a map. And it's now led into the app that I've developed with the augmented reality controller that you developed, Oliver.
Well, there's something that I'm interested in. You say there's this system. Is this a public system, or who provides the data to give you all these locations for ships and planes?
Sure. Well, all the ships and the planes, they individually broadcast over the radio waves where they are, where they're going, et cetera, et cetera. So radio waves have obviously got a very short, relatively short range. So our receiver here in the UK can only pick up ships and planes very near to us. So we turn to the enthusiast community to help us out. They'd already been collecting this data from all around the world. They're just as obviously interested in iPhone apps as us. They own Ship Finder and Plane Finder as well. And they decided to share their data with us. And it's very kind of them too as well.
Well, that's great. So basically you have lots of data from all around the world. And do I get this correctly that you aggregate and sort it in a way on your website? And then basically you offer a variety of clients on the iPhone to consume this data, so that somebody who's interested in what planes they're looking at or what ships they are seeing, basically they have a way to get that, and not just like numerical data, but to really see it on a map.
Yes, yeah, I mean, it's perfect. The iPhone is absolutely perfect for this sort of thing, because it's got obviously the GPS inbuilt, and you can scroll around a map. And obviously, it's perfectly because it's mobile. Usually, this data is received by a receiver that's linked into a PC, and you don't want to take your PC down to the beach and see where the ship is, or you don't want to take your PC onto a boat. So, having the iPhone there with the, you know, the 3G connectivity and just seeing the ships and planes where they are, it's perfect.
But the thing that I don't get is this the same as GPS, or is it? Radio, how do you know a location? Is this
sure? Well, the ships and the planes obviously themselves have a GPS receiver on board, and then over the radio waves, they broadcast that information of who they are. They've got a unique identifier, and you know, those from the networking world, like a MAC address, it's very unique to them. So, yeah, and we obviously aggregate all that data and we present it in multiple formats.
So you essentially have more information at your fingertips than a single individual enthusiast or even authority would have.
Yes, absolutely. And we are trying to work with authorities as well on that note to try and get that data as well into the app as well.
Well, one thing that would be cool in that regard, maybe if you could tell from the data that a ship or a plane has trouble, then the enthusiast community might be able to know that there's something wrong even before the authorities.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And that's usually the case with these sorts of amateur communities.
Uh-huh. Do you have a historic example that something like that happened, or is it too young still?
No. I mean, it's not exactly with inside our app, but this method called AIS, it discovered that ship that got hijacked by the pirates in the Baltic Sea. It was called the Arctic Sea, the ship. Mm-hmm. And all the enthusiasts were tracking it. And in fact, the Coast Guard, the UK Coast Guard, were turning to these enthusiasts to ask for their data to help them out locate where it is.
So it's not like you see in the movies that the CIA has a spy satellite and that tracks the ship, but it's really a couple of guys who are interested in ships who kind of direct the antennas in the right direction, and then the authorities have to come to them to ask where the ship has been last seen or something.
Yeah, from experience, that seems to be the way it is.
Uh-huh. So community still has a place in our world.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, that's amazing, but that's not the new app that we were mentioning. You said something about augmented reality. So
yeah,
full disclosure here, as Dr. Touch, I've created and I'm offering for sale the DT Augmented Reality Controller, which is a framework to allow you to mount your own icons or views on a live video. So you would have, for example, icons for points of interest. And as you rotate your iPhone and you tilt and bank, the icon would always be overlaid in the right direction and the right altitude. You know what's going on. And Lee, you developed the very first commercial app using this component.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Well, about 3 or 4 months ago, I wanted to write an augmented reality app with our data that we've got. A couple of users had asked for it. So I looked into it, and obviously it was available since 3.1, that you could do this sort of thing. And boy, was I in for a big, big surprise. It was very, very difficult. There was no APIs out the box from Apple for it. So it was very, very difficult. And when I saw Oliver's Twitter about this, I was very excited and instantly contacted him and said, I need this very quickly. Hmm. So I wrote it. It took about 1 to 2 weeks using your augmented reality controller. And it has been very, very easy to work with. And any changes I've needed as well, Dr. Touch has been there to help out. Very, very good. And the app got approved in record time, really, 2 to 3 days. And it's doing well. It's been in the App Store for 2 to 3 days now.
One thing you told me that might be interesting to hear for other developers, it got rejected once.
Mm.
Tell us why and what you did to fix that.
Sure, sure. Well, what I did is it got rejected because if the user clicked don't allow to allow the app to have their location, nothing really happened inside the app. And Apple pointed me to the human interface guidelines, as they always do, and said I needed to provide feedback. So working with Dr. Touch, I extended your part. And contacted you about this, and you're putting it into the latest trunk because it's quite a useful addition.
Yeah, so to cut the long story short, if you're developing something that requires the consent of the user or a network connectivity of sorts, and you don't have that, then Apple wants you to tell the user that it can't perform its functions. Like if you... I had this GPS recording app, and if you don't have network connectivity, it would not get any core location updates, for example, if you were on a touch device. And what they want to do is to show the user, well, you don't have location enabled, so you don't have to wait for anything to appear, basically. And in your case... getting location updates and heading information is crucial to augmented reality working. And if this is disabled, then, well, the user would wait very long for something to happen. And it was a quick fix, but something to bear in mind if you are submitting a new app to Apple. Think of those cases where there's no network or the user doesn't approve to location information. Well, that's it for this. The app is Ships Ahoy. It's available on the App Store. It's really amazing. There's screenshots on there, so have a look. It's really fun to see a ship on the horizon with the sun setting, and then on top of it, you have a box saying this is the, I don't know, HMS Titanic, and it's sailing for America for a date with an iceberg. Well, hopefully not. Lee, would you want to share something about future plans you have, maybe?
Well, I would, Oliver, but it's a very competitive environment, the App Store, as all these developers that are listening know. So I'm going to keep it a secret, but hopefully you guys can guess, and hopefully it'll be just as exciting as Ships Ahoy.
Well, great. Thanks for being on my show, Lee.
No problem. Thank you.
And that's it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. The next episode, obviously, will be after the event, and then we'll discuss what Apple has put in front of us. Until then, make sure all your apps run in full resolution.
So thanks for having me.
All right, that's it for our interview. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I'm now going to check out in-app settings kit.